So that reading came across my Facebook feed on Wednesday, my father's 91st birthday. And frankly, I wasn't sure whether to laugh or cry. Laughing is good, but there was so much in that that resonated for me. Satire, of course, plays an important role in our lives, help us to reflect on things and challenge us. But in a world that is asking so much of us, in a world with so many difficulties and challenges, in a world so filled with despair, there was some resonance in that article as well that transcended satire. Clearly, I'm not alone in my feelings, as my Facebook scroll shows me how focused we are on the negative in our culture, how our news that inundates us from every direction, print, online, television, negative, negative, despair, trauma, terrorism, war, pain. Last month, I preached about eschatology, ideas about the end times, and I used Star Trek as an example of a positive eschatology of not just world peace, but planetary peace in the United Federation of Planets, a utopia of sorts. This month, it's more about dystopia, bad place. Something that's very prevalent now in our movies and our stories, on TV, in books. Many of you are familiar with the Hunger Games trilogy or Divergent, books for young people. We've had dystopian fiction and stories for as probably as long as humans have been around, but in contemporary dystopia, the stories are centered around young people. Probably not surprising, given that those in their 20s came of age during 9/11, terrorism, wars that felt endless, helicopter parents, a sense of, will I ever be able to find my place in this world? An article in the New York Times profiled some young women in Seattle and their feelings about the future, their feelings about making sense of this world. So into this world of difficulty, I chose a summer reading series called Challenging Books for Challenging Times. So here was my thinking. I'm already bummed. But it's a surface kind of bummed, right? It's a, oh my God, bam, 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 coming at me from every direction. Why don't I read some things that really challenge me more deeply? Why don't I challenge you to read books with me that challenge us to go deeper on the stories? I wanted to learn how to understand and engage with some of these challenges. So I chose three books, three challenging books. I don't think I disappointed any of the people that came to the book discussion groups about how challenging that they were. I chose one that was about history, Warmth of Other Suns. I'll tell you about each of these books in a minute. I chose one that is about now a slum in India that is outside the Mumbai airport. And I chose one about the future, the idea of the extinction of the human species. I didn't expect to find hope in all three of these books. Catherine Boo, Behind the Beautiful Forevers. The title comes from the billboards that advertise a tile that says Beautiful Forevers. And the billboards were strategically placed by the Mumbai airport so that you couldn't see the slum that was adjacent to the airport. The slum was behind the Beautiful Forevers, the words that were on the billboards. Her book tells the story of a slum on a wadi. I don't know how many people that live there, but we learned so much about the people that live there because the author essentially embedded herself in this place for 4 years. We learn about their lives as garbage pickers. We learn about how they're totally tuned to what's going on at the airport, when the security guards are there, when the garbage is dumped, where the best garbage is. We learn about their lives in India with corruption and despair and their struggle. And we learn about their hope. We learn in this book that people can be hopeful despite conditions that I think would fill me so much with despair that I wouldn't be able to move. We learn that they were able to see possibilities through the difficulties of their lives. The Warmth of Other Suns. Oh, mwah, fabulous book. There were at least 30 people who participated in the discussion of this book. The story of three individuals who left the Jim Crow South sometime in the 20th century to migrate north and west. We learned about how horrible the Jim Crow South was, where the oppression of African Americans was a form of national terrorism every minute of every day. And many people commented in the discussions about how they knew about Jim Crow, but this book gave it to them as a visceral experience. We learned about these people who could find hope in the possibility their lives could be better and migrate to other places in this country. A migration that was not itself without challenges. A migration they feared that they would not survive because of the restrictions that were placed on them and the desire of the people who essentially owned them in their work to keep them in place. Both these books, people in desperate situations finding hope. These books countered a narrative that we find now in our fiction, and indeed in those dystopian fiction, and a narrative in our culture that when things are terrible and there is despair, a hero rises up. A hero rises to give us hope and show us the way. We pin our hopes on this hero who's going to lead us out of this darkness. Now, of course, the people in these books didn't have that hero. They only had themselves and their own courage and their own vision and ability to see the possibilities. Myself here, 21st century, United States, in good circumstances, I find myself wishing for that hero, for another Martin Luther King or Jesus or Gandhi to show us the way, to inspire us to be hopeful. But these books have asked me to think differently, have said, let's not wait for that hero. Let's not wait for that big heroic hope. Let's think about small hero hope, everyday person hope. We've talked about hope a lot in this sermon. I think I probably said it 75 times already in the time that I've been talking. What is hope? We know it, right? We feel it. We know it when we feel it. Hope is believing that your situation, your life, that of yourself or others, indeed for the world itself, it's a belief or an aspiration that it can get better. It's a feeling of life-affirming possibility. Where does this hope come from? How do we access this hope? It can come from inside us, in prayer or meditation, inspiration in our thoughts and in our minds, an idea that turns our dark thoughts into light ones. Most often it comes from response to something outside ourselves, something uplifting. Ina's music gives me hope. Something that someone says to you, something that you see, a connection that you make to another person, coming here among this community of care. Hope is a form of grace. It's a form of prayer. It's an intervention of the Spirit that some call God. In these books, each of the individuals found hope in a different way. For the African Americans trapped in Jim Crow South, the courage of a relative who was able to escape to the North and come back and tell them about a life that was not so filled with despair created that hope for them. In the Behind the Beautiful Forevers, their attentiveness to seeing possibilities gave them hope. Examples that other people set gave them hope that it didn't have to be so bad all the time, that there are ways out. Letting one small success in your life open your heart to the possibility of more. Creating hope is what we do in community. We do it together. We do it for each other. This is what we do here in church. I told someone recently that Roger and I are in the hope business. Our church is in the hope business. We come together to deepen our lives and be a force for healing in the world, a force for hope. I would argue that for those of us who have enough to eat, enough money, have mental and physical health, have general well-being in our lives, I would argue that hope is a moral imperative. In a world of so much despair and challenge and trouble and difficulty and pain and inequality, hope is a moral imperative. So how do we make it through that fog of all the challenges in the world? How do we rise above the onion of, I just can't do this anymore? In our globally connected world, every day, those of us especially who are tuned into the media are made aware of all the pain and suffering, war, violence, and the human capacity to hurt each other. The challenge in our world today is to not let all that pain overwhelm us, or worse, succumb to hopelessness. But I think perhaps worse than hopelessness is indifference. Part of the problem of living in this media-saturated world is that we sometimes feel like we have to take on layers of protection. We have to resist letting in the pain, which also means that we resist letting in the love and the joy. In our evil class last year, we had a debate on whether indifference was a form of evil. The 20th century Unitarian theologian James Luther Adams was clear that indifference was indeed a sin. He called it lassitude, the sin of being passive to the suffering of the world. Like the good people of Germany who were passive to the Nazi reign. This is what I mean by our moral imperative to be hopeful, that we who are not suffering do not have the luxury of being indifferent. Or worse yet, the luxury of cynicism. Watch out for cynicism. If you see it creeping up in your life, check it out right away. Satire is good. Humor is good. Black humor is good. The humor where we laugh at pain is good. It's healthy. It's an expression. It's a release. Cynicism is soul deadening. So I've given you a challenge. I've told you that indifference is a sin. I've told you that hope is a moral imperative. So where do we start with all that? Do not expect yourself to take in all the troubles of the world and process it and understand it, have an opinion on it, know what to do about it. Do not do that to yourself. No one human can handle all of that information in a meaningful way. It is okay to be overwhelmed. Do not steep yourself in it. Get out of the political mess. Don't focus on the Facebook articles that reinforce how you think the world is really bad. Look at the cuddly elephant videos on your Facebook feed. Enjoy the cuddly elephant videos on your Facebook feed. Let them into your heart. I think the first thing that you can do more than anything else to begin to feel hopeful is to lift up your head and look around. Go outside. Practice gratitude. Share the good stuff. Watch those cuddly animal videos. Listen to uplifting music. Love your family and your friends. Love your community. Come to church. Say nice things to each other. How did the people in these books find hope? The garbage pickers noted changes in the airport and shared it with each other and found ways to increase their income. But they had to have their heads up. They had to be looking. They had to be engaged. The families in the Jim Crow South were able to find the courage to believe that their lives could be better. If they can do it, we can do it. Those of you here who have despair and challenge and difficulty in your lives, I'm not talking to you. And I want you to reach out to those of us who can offer you hope and love. And I'd like to ask everyone here who feels well and healthy and good and in a good place to be an agent for hope. To be one of those people that looks for the positive, that looks for positive ways to make connections. And I have a simple idea that I want to share with you, something that I've been trying out and seems to be working well. Many of you might remember my sermon last year where I encouraged you to greet people as a way of reaching out to people that are different. Greet people. Doesn't matter who they are. Greet them. They may not greet you back, but don't take that personally. I've upgraded my greeting. I've upgraded my greeting to include a wave. Now, babies, what's one of the first things that babies are taught, right? It's a bid. It's a connection to engage is that wave. And it's so embodied that we kind of do it without even thinking about it. Hi. Wave back, people. Hi. Hi. You're not proving my point. We're going to try that again. Hi.
Hi.
Hi. You would be surprised. People kind of go. And you see as their hand goes up, their smile opens and their eyes brighten. Try it. I haven't told you about the last book yet. The Sixth Extinction. This is a big picture book. And I'll tell you the Reader's Digest seriously condensed version of this book. We are killing our planet and may cause our own extinction. One of the most poignant parts of the book is in the last chapter when she visits a lab in San Diego where in a nitrogen-freezed environment they have little vials that contain cell cultures from species that we have caused the extinction of or are likely to cause the extinction of, that humans have caused extinction of. Is this positive or negative? Is it hopeful or pragmatic? We're killing off our planet, so we're going to save little bits of the creatures that we've made extinct so that possibly at some point we can save them. The author asks, wouldn't it be better practically and ethically to focus on what can be done and is being done to save species rather than to speculate gloomily about a future in which the biosphere is reduced to little plastic vials? I found hope in this book. I found hope in the author's concluding point about the nature of humanity and what makes us different from other species. Humans have the capacity to change the world. We are changing the world for better or for worse. And that makes me ask the question whether there's enough evidence to believe that we will change it for the better. What do you think? this human species of which we are all a part, this species that creates art and music, joy and love, but also has a dark side, the side that we see so much in our world today. I've thought a lot about this question in preparation for this sermon, and I've decided that I'm not looking for evidence and I'm not interested in speculation. I choose to believe in the goodness of human nature. I choose to stand with those who work to save this planet, who work for social justice. I choose to stand with those who believe in what is possible. And I'm not going to wait for the next Messiah to come and save us from ourselves. I choose hope.